Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism.
Welcome to AI in Journalism, a show that explores the intersections of technology, journalism, and the future of media. I'm Yumi Wilson, a professor at SF State and a former reporter who's trained hundreds of journalists worldwide on leveraging LinkedIn and social media for journalism and branding. Today's show will give us an in-depth look at which AI tools every journalist should know about with our special guest, Dan Greco. Dan is the product lead at Futurepedia, a platform dedicated to demystifying AI and its applications for professionals across various industries. With a passion for technology and education, Dan has played a pivotal role in shaping Futurepedia's offerings, which include comprehensive analysis of AI tools, practical guides, and an interactive community for AI enthusiasts. Futurepedia has grown to serve over 5 million users, helping them harness the power of AI to advance their careers and enhance their workplace efficiencies. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Yumi. I'm excited to get into it.
Yay. So let's get started. For newcomers interested in integrating AI into their workflow, what foundational steps do you recommend to start leveraging AI tools effectively?
Great question. I think starting at the absolute highest level, a beginner needs to acknowledge that artificial intelligence is a complete paradigm shift. Until now, we were responsible for doing all the work. But now AI is a paradigm shift in that we basically can train or access assistants or agents, subsets of ourselves or the selves that we want to be, or the versions of ourselves professionally or the versions of our business that we want to get to, and have them essentially in our pocket, in our phone, in our computer, and leverage it alongside us. At this current state, it seems to be AI that really helps people automate and be more efficient in doing the more tedious, repetitive work. Also as a tool to assist them in creative, brainstorming and ideation. But I think the very first start, the step is to acknowledge that this is a paradigm shift and you need to think through things differently. It's almost kind of like when the internet came out, we had access at our homes until Wi-Fi, right? And then it's like, oh my gosh, now we need to rethink, how can we use this on the go? Like, there's so many different use cases for it. There's so many different ways we can benefit from this. And I think, again, it's that mindset of thinking, oh my gosh, I have the ability to automate and get help from a digital version of an expert, basically, right from my desk chair.
I'm at a university, and there are a number of people who are worried or concerned that the use of AI will, I don't know if cheapen is the right word, but weaken the abilities or skills of the students who are learning to write or tell news stories. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern. And, to an extent, there will be abuse of it. I know that students are finding ways around their work by leveraging AI to do, I guess, some of the heavy lifting. But the hope is that universities and educators of all levels will acknowledge that it's here and it needs to be leveraged to benefit us and make us more intelligent, more strategic, more efficient. But I think making sure that the learning doesn't escape it. I know that the Khan Academy has developed a really impressive AI assistant for learning, and making sure that it's a positive experience versus, just a shortcut.
And I'll have to admit that for me, once I started doing the research around the winter break and realizing how much AI has been, you know, is really a part of journalism, communications, marketing, and all of the industries where I'm teaching media writing, I actually started incorporating the use of AI in my classrooms this semester. And the results have been pretty amazing because, first of all, I remember I asked one of my students, a group of 20, I said, how many of you have used AI? And they all raised their hand. However, they had not been able to ever say that or to even know how to use it. And I kept thinking, well, they probably know more than me, right? But as I was showing them some things I had learned about generative AI and the way that you could use a prompt to really get the kind of response you wanted, they were asking, how did you do that? And they wanted to know. And that's kind of, for me, when the light bulb went off, that there is this way that we can show future writers, future storytellers, because that's the business I'm in, how an AI tool can help you, but not replace the need for originality, the need for creativity, the need for accuracy and honesty, and all those things that, of course, journalism teaches.
Well said. Especially on the fact-checking side, journalists need to be incredibly careful. You know, there's, if you're not familiar with what the term is for hallucinations, that's where an AI model will essentially invent an answer that is most likely incorrect. And so it's, you know, anything where there's facts involved, I think it's important that, you know, students are double-checking, triple-checking any information that's received. But I think, you know, again, as a tool to help research, to help structure outlines, to help structure, you know, a good flow, maybe a compare different types of tone for an article, right? Like depending on your target audience. I could certainly see that. You know, I think we're all kind of predispositioned to write in a particular way, which is how we've, you know, generally communicate most likely. But if your target audience is more technical or more, you know, more geared to think a certain way that's a little bit different from you, I think AI can be a tool to help you reframe and reposition and also restructure, you know, how a piece of work flows and ebbs and flows and stuff.
I agree. And I also want to mention that before I did start incorporating AI tools into the classroom this semester, I checked to see if the university had a policy on the use of AI. And SF State actually does. They basically kind of have guidelines, but there wasn't a no policy. Like, I was worried there was going to be like, no, don't use it.
Yeah.
Let's move to another question. So this question has to do with tools. Can you discuss some of the tools that journalists and communicators might find useful? And then I want to separate that from, you know, the tools that they could find useful, but then I want to go to the tools they have to be using. So let's start with what they might find useful.
Yeah, I think the tools that they might find useful, I'll give you three. There's a tool in no particular order, by the way, and I'm not affiliated with any of these tools in the sense of, you know, I'm not being paid to share these. Feedly has actually been around for a while. It's feedly.com, I believe. They didn't start as an AI tool, but they've recently launched some really impressive AI features to where you can kind of curate your own AI news feed, especially if you're in a, you know, discipline of journalism that's very wide, like business or, you know, something where there's ton of different types of content, there might be only like a subset that you're really interested in. And so Feedly, you can create your own customized news feeds so that you're kind of staying on top of the latest and greatest stories and starting to kind of put together trends and understand where things are kind of headed in a certain space. And it also is impressive because it gets better over time. So you can kind of like, based on your news feed for one day, you can kind of like rate it and thumbs up, thumbs down across it. And then you're beginning to iterate on it. So I think that's really helpful for just monitoring different spaces and just staying in touch. I think that's a fairly large aspect of journalism, is just being so in touch with where things are at currently. And I think that tool is definitely one to consider looking into. And it's very affordable from what I remember. The next one is a browser extension called Harpa, H-A-R-P-A. And this is a browser extension, essentially almost like an assistant in your browser. And there's hundreds of different commands that you can have it access. So if you're looking at a large web page, you can have it create a short summary or a long summary. You can ask it a question, you know, like based on this page, answer these questions. You can extract information from the page. into a table or into an Excel or something like that. You can copy a paste or copy a subset of that text and then have it rewrite it or copy it into an email or what have you. There's a lot of really good utility with it, and they're still building, you know, they're releasing a lot of valuable features, but in general, just having a really good browser assistant that can help you research and understand things as you're, you know, reading throughout the web, I think is important. There are other ones too that are similar to this. Frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if Google Chrome comes out with their own, you know, Gemini powered browser assistant at some point. But for now, I personally use Harpa. I absolutely love it. I'm getting better and better at it every day. I will say that I think going back to my initial point about, you know, the paradigm shift and thinking through the, you know, what's possible with AI, I would probably start with wrapping your head around that before delving into this, because I could see this being a little overwhelming. It's fairly intuitive, but I still think having some fundamentals under your belt would only benefit you before jumping into this tool. And then I have a third tool, and this is a little unorthodox recommendation, but I use it a lot, and it's called thegigabrain.com. And so what the GigaBrain has done is they are essentially aggregating high quality user generated content across mostly sites like Quora and Reddit to get at like real human sentiment and understanding of things. On their site, they kind of brand themselves as like weed through the, you know, affiliate websites and blogs and stuff. If you want to actually know like what the best dishwasher is for your house, you can go in there and get like an AI answer that is, you know, has been informed by like what real people have said. But I also think there's a lot of really good insights in there into understanding pain points that particular consumers or people have. I've used it personally for like to better understand concepts around parenting and child development. So I think that's a tool where I would suggest you go and enter some queries and play around with it, because I think it's going to be pretty compelling to try out as you're, again, just trying to look to understand how people actually feel about a given topic or subject.
These are three great tools. So you mentioned Feedly, Harpa, which is a browser extension, and GigaBrain. How does Futurepedia help professionals in these fields in journalism and communication select the right tools?
I think we help those in journalism the same way that we help other proactive professionals. So I'll just go from the top level. Futurepedia started as the first dedicated AI tools directory, and we've since added in new features to essentially verify tools that are high quality and have some staying power in the space. So that essentially you're not looking at a list of 5,000 potential tools, it's more like 500. And so we take pride in not only doing the aggregation, but also doing some curation. So what you can do on Futurepedia is you can sign up and describe who you are and what you do for work. And we also have AI recommendation engine. So you go on and say that you're a journalist, we might recommend some tools that are befitting to that of a journalist. We also have an AI chatbot that's trained on top 400 or 500 tools. So if you want personalized recommendation based on a given use case, you can go and have a conversation with our chatbot. So between our recommendations and our chatbot, and then our user interface that is categorized all these tools, I think you'll discover some really helpful ones.
You know, so if someone signs up for Futurepedia, what's the cost?
$0. It's completely free.
How is that possible?
So we have a newsletter with about 150,000 subscribers, I believe, at the moment. And so we do have some sponsorships that are present in the newsletter. We do have some featured placements on the website as well, but they're labeled as such. And so we do make money from advertising, but we are committed to distributing as much helpful content and resources for free as possible.
That's amazing, because, you know, I'm paying $20 a month for the, you know, ChatGPT-4 version. We haven't talked about ChatGPT. Should we talk about ChatGPT?
I'm open to talking about ChatGPT, yeah.
Okay. Since you mentioned, you know, that what you help, that Futurepedia helps, you know, looking at the tools that have staying power before we jump to ChatGPT. My question always is, you know, as I'm learning about new tools in the AI space, I'll get really excited about it, start using it, and then realize very quickly it's outdated or there's just something more powerful, because I'll, you know, try a different tool. How do we, for example, as journalists, not become overwhelmed because there's so many tools that are coming out? How does Futurepedia help with that?
Fantastic point. Yeah, the reality is there's an endless amount of new tools coming out and being released. A lot of these tools will also pivot into other areas, and the larger companies like Microsoft's and Google's and Meta will be coming out with more tools as well. So unfortunately, that's just never going to end. Ultimately, it's the job of the professional in this day and age to just remain proactive. And I would say, don't fix what's not broken, though. You know, if you find a tool that's really adding value to you, use it until it's not. Don't keep obsessing about finding the next latest and greatest. I think that just kind of is a little bit contradictory. So I would stick to just, you know, if you find something that's really helpful, keep using it and don't obsess about the latest and greatest. And that's coming from someone that is always publishing the latest and greatest on Futurepedia. But I think AI fatigue is a real thing. That's, you know, the overwhelm of following this space. And so, you know, that's what I'm trying to do to reduce my own AI fatigue, is just to stick with what's working.
So that really actually brings me back to ChatGPT, because while I have been, you know, trying a lot of different tools, I'll find myself going back to ChatGPT because it just seems to produce the results I need. For example, you know, I was doing an exercise with my students to produce a 2-column script. And, you know, for years, you know, it's kind of like telling students, you got to buy this product or you got to buy this program. And then to realize that if you put in the right prompt or you use the right keywords, you can have ChatGPT create a really good structure for a news story that needs to be in a 2-column script. What are your thoughts about ChatGPT? And is that kind of a go-to place for people still?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a great place to start because it was kind of first in there and it's free. I don't think that it's the one-stop shop solution that some might think that it is, especially as these models continue to evolve. Everything that Meta is doing and Anthropic is doing and OpenAI is doing, they're ultimately kind of working on carving out, you know, I mean, it's kind of a AI race to an extent, but I think they're also kind of carving out differentiators along the way. And frankly, they're changing so fast that I don't really have a specific recommendation for journalism, but I actually am working on a resource, just as a side note, that I think will be helpful to professionals in selecting which model best fits their specific use case. And hopefully that's something that is just automatically updated over time as these new versions get released. So more on that if you're going to follow along.
Definitely. Well, so would we be able to learn more if we, you know, start to follow Futurepedia and sign up? Would we be alerted and say, okay, this is out now and you can use it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to, we notify our users anytime we have a new feature or functionality on the site, for sure. So backing up to ChatGPT though, I think it's a great place to start. And I think the best thing that you could do once you get a handle on the basics of prompting is to begin creating your own custom GPTs. So if you're not familiar with what that is, you're able to train a version of ChatGPT specifically for a given use case. So if you wanted to create, you know, really snappy Twitter posts or 2-column articles like you just described, you can go and set custom instructions and maybe even upload custom resources. Like if there's books or articles or PDFs that you have that are highly informative for this, you can go in there and create a custom GPT that you can use privately or you can release to the public. And this can help you create really good content, you know, over and over again.
I had started to create a custom GPT, you know, that kind of centered around journalism. But then I kind of stopped because I was wondering if I create all of this, then is it like I'm doing all the work and then it's just like it's unpaid labor, really. And is there a concern about that? Because I feel like everything that you put into, whether it's Gemini or ChatGPT or any of these tools, like you're also providing that center information that helps them to be more knowledgeable and to be able to answer questions for others.
Yes, that's a great point. By default, if you are not paying for the team's version of ChatGPT, I believe everything that you enter into it could be Excel files, PDFs, anything that you upload is going to you know, the model will be trained on that. And frankly, that's why bias will ultimately come out of these things. And I think OpenAI is working on cleaning that up. But, you know, the bias that we have as humans is getting uploaded to the model, and then it's getting trained on it and regurgitating it to people that are asking for things. So that's why bias happens. But there are settings where you can disable that. And I believe that's an option for creating custom GPTs. You can create a custom GPT and upload things and have it not get trained on it. An alternative also is if you are open to using their API for something, anything that's trained via the API, I do not believe trains the model. So both of those, I think, are options to help you keep your work.
That's great to know. Now, here's the other side of that. I feel like as an educator for many years, I'm actually excited to share my knowledge and the information that I've had from, you know, years of, you know, being either at the Chronicle or, you know, research that I've done. I actually think it's great because I feel like we're feeding this nucleus of a place where all of this information will be transferred or given to others and through the generations. What are your thoughts on that idea? You know, that we're all kind of feeding this nucleus or the center so that it can be shared with others.
Yeah. Essentially, the democratization of global knowledge is just even more accessible than it was, you know, when the internet kind of began to take off, right? Like they call it Web 2, where everyone was creating blogs and sharing their perspectives across social media and websites and everything. But now has the potential to be a lot more centralized, which is within these models. Yeah, again, I think, you know, there still is so much that separates a human from a machine and the knowledge that they're trained on. So, you know, I'll just, as a random example, I feel like I learned the most from my college experience. I went to a small private school in upstate New York, and I learned the most from my college experience from interacting with people and professors and, you know, being immersed in an environment that was all human, you know? So I think that there still is so much to learn from each other and from professors and mentors and advisors and educators. And I'm not too concerned that goes away.
Well, that's a perfect place to bring in the next question, which is there is this fear that AI is going to replace jobs, human jobs. And you're saying that that's not the case, that we shouldn't be worried about that?
I do think that there will be some job replacement. I think, as far as in an educational standpoint, I still think the human-to-human learning is incredibly valuable. But when it comes to jobs, obviously there are so many different kinds. But I will say at the highest level, I'm of the belief that if you're an individual with kind of like one skill, like you do like one thing incredibly well, like for example, if you design logos really well, or you design websites really well, if all your eggs are in one basket, there's just inherently more risk associated with that. So I would consider if you are in that realm where you have one skill, I would consider how you can diversify it. How can you use AI to complement that skill? How can you use AI to acquire more skills and begin to be more diversified? As an example, you know, as a product leader, you have to be, you know, equal parts kind of creative and strategic and technical and analytical, and you're using lots of different parts of your brain. You're using lots of different tools that are associated with all those things. Most of the time in technical environments, you're kind of at the epicenter of, you know, what's being built. And so you have to interface with lots of different types of people. And so, you know, to an extent on the other end of the spectrum, I feel like product people are very safe when it comes to being, you know, at risk of AI intruding. I think the only concern that I would have is if you really just had one or two things that you do really, really well. And if you are one of those people, then I would consider how can you be more diversified.
Staying on that subject, what would you say to a student who is currently studying journalism, for example, or even just communications, the broader area? You know, how do they make sure they're not going to be, you know, replaced, or that the skills they're learning won't matter? What would be the advice you give to them?
Yeah, I think the good news is with journalists, their bylines are, you know, everywhere, right? When they're starting to write for publications, I would certainly start thinking about becoming, you know, obviously journalism is a discipline itself, but a complementary discipline to journalism might be social media and learning how to kind of cultivate your own audience. that's not really something that AI can do. Sure, there are AI influencers, but frankly, I'm bearish on the outlook of that. I could see there being minimal traction gain there. I don't think people are going to really take to that. And therefore, I don't think platforms are going to take to it. So again, for journalism, social media would be a really complementary skill to acquire and learn how to cultivate your own audience. You know, that kind of becomes something that you own, you know, like if you have 10 or 20,000 LinkedIn followers that are going to see everything that you post, like that's yours. And that, you know, enables so much opportunity for you. So yeah, I would just consider thinking about things that can complement you, and maybe it is, you know, in the podcast realm too, right? So journalism is, you know, podcasts, I think, complement journalism too.
What about Sora and other tools that are making it easy to produce video? I mean, some of the best J schools, you know, teach and show people how to create quality film shows and all that. And now from the sounds of it, you know, a tool can do that.
Yeah, I have a perspective on that. I'm not sure it's a popular one. I think the technology is incredibly impressive and we're going to see it be used. But I think that to a degree, there will be some, you know, backlash around it. For example, if a movie studio produces a movie that's, you know, 80% AI and, you know, there's very minimal screen time for the actors and people that they love to follow, I just don't really see people really appreciating that. I think ultimately people love helping people and supporting people, not really supporting the money-hungry movie studio for abusing this technology to produce something significantly cheaper. Sure, maybe it's entertaining and maybe some people don't really care about that, but I think in the long run, people will care about supporting people. And so I could definitely see the technology being used maybe to fill in gaps in like commercials and, you know, short films. And I certainly think it empowers, you know, people that don't have, you know, a lot of money and time and energy and resources to be more creative, which is awesome. But as far as on the scale of like disrupting Hollywood, I'm not really sure that I believe that that'll take long term just because of consumer preferences. That's just my personal belief. And I think in general, a lot of businesses are going to leverage AI more operationally to be efficient and less on the generative side, because that might ultimately end up being, again, like a negative for them that they didn't really support the creative people.
So what sets Futurepedia apart from other platforms offering AI resources, and how do you ensure that the content remains accessible yet thorough for all levels of expertise?
Great question. So I think what separates Futurepedia is that, you know, we're trying to be a very comprehensive resource for professionals and businesses looking to adopt AI. There's foundational content to get, you know, acclimated to the basics. We have a very practical weekly newsletter. We're not trying to send you, you know, a daily barrage of things. We're trying to keep it short and sweet for everyone. You can come to the site, and any tools that have the blue check mark were verified and vetted by our editorial team. So, you know, again, we're just doing our job to be the best curators for tools in business. We're not trying to be the biggest directory of AI tools. There's lots of directories that have content around, you know, AI for dating and AI for gambling. And, you know, there's a lot of use cases for hobbies, and I'm not knocking any of those, but I'm just, you know, we're trying to focus on the needs of professionals that are trying to be proactive in upskilling or reskilling and wanting to be in control of kind of their careers in the next wave of what work looks like.
That's kind of what I'm dealing with. I feel like, yeah, I'm like, okay, how do I, you know, not only stay on top of things as a journalist and storyteller and, you know, all the things I'm doing, but how do I teach it to other people? And they're coming up. So let me ask a question. For example, if I'm on, let's say, ChatGPT, and I type in, what are the best AI tools to use in my field? Couldn't someone argue, well, I could just ask, you know, an AI tool. I don't have to go to another resource. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I've seen several instances where people are using that and then Futurepedia is cited as the source. Because again, a lot of these models have internet access. So they're aware that we exist and that we're of high quality. So you might get a similar result from doing that. And that's all good and well. But I think by default, Futurepedia will provide more details on the tools, you know, around like pricing and use cases and security and some of the other human elements that we got from actually taking a look at it. But yeah, as far as just like finding out about new tools, I certainly think you can use ChatGPT. But if you're interested in a little more details, Futurepedia is good. And we do have some user-generated content on there. So, you know, if you're looking for tools that you could read some reviews about them, we have that. We're working on getting more of that, but we do have that. And that's a priority to continue investing in that, because I think that's important for folks.
Kind of like the consumer reports of AI.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And consumer reports charges for access, but we don't really want to do that. Maybe at some point we have a premium product. For now, you know, we would love giving away as much as possible for free and just make sure that it's helpful for folks.
Looking ahead, what are some of the most exciting AI advancements that your team believes will significantly impact the industries, everyone, in the next few years?
From now and the next 12 months, I would say AI assistants and automation workflows are going to be big. So Zapier came out with Zapier Central, which kind of is essentially you can create your own assistants to accomplish tasks, ideally like repetitive ones. And then I certainly think we're going to see a lot more on mobile as well. Like, you got to remember that like Siri on the iPhone hasn't even, like, she's technically an AI, but she's nowhere close to up to par with like where things are at currently. So I could definitely see a lot of really impressive things coming to smartphones directly. I mean, sure, like ChatGPT has the mobile app and stuff, but I think applications that we rely on, we're going to see a lot more there. And then beyond 12 months, so there's a thing called AI agents, and technically that's a thing right now, and that might escalate faster than I imagine. But AI agents are different than assistants in that agents are almost like you can design and create employees for yourself or for your business that essentially work 24/7. And so that technology does exist, and that's where things are headed. Frankly, I think that's going to be really, really big. I think it's a little bit harder to execute than folks might realize, but that technology exists and there are companies that are building them and deploying them. It's just not as prevalent and it's a lot more complicated to get going with. But yeah, that's certainly the future. I'm fairly confident in that. So I would start to at least look into that and watch some videos if you're curious about being a couple steps ahead.
I'm definitely going to be watching AI agents. Just the name alone is intriguing.
Yeah, I think autonomous agents, and look up like AI autonomous agents, because those are the ones where it's like it's almost like you write a job description for them and then they go and just do it relentlessly.
I think I know the answer, but just to be clear, so autonomous AI agent, let's say I figure out how to use it and then create a job description and I, you know, in a sense have these agents working for me. Do I have to then give them prompts and other commands, or are they thinking independently?
I think they are, but I think that probably wouldn't be wise. It's almost like I would think that it would make more sense to say, go and produce this work and then have me review it. And then once I sign off on it, then go and post it, you know? But yeah, in theory, that's like where things are headed. Again, where things are at right now is a little bit more technical. It's a lot more coding involved, but I do think at some point it becomes a lot more no-code friendly to build and launch these and get them integrated into your business.
So it sounds like there are going to be so many more changes when you kind of separate it like the next 12 months and the next 5 years. And you had mentioned at the very beginning, it's a paradigm shift. So what do you see happening in our world in, let's say, 5 years from now?
I think a lot of people have predictions around AGI. And if you're not familiar with what that is, that's artificial general intelligence, where essentially AI has gotten to the point where it's surpassed the average intelligence of the average person, which would be an incredible accomplishment, because then there's lots of different types of intelligence built into it. I do think we're within 5 years of that. And frankly, I don't really know what that looks like. You know, there could be a whole new set of jobs created that are, you know, that replace the jobs that have been lost. There might be scenarios where, you know, people are just working significantly less because of AI. And that's kind of the hope that I have, maintaining the view of an optimist. So maybe instead of working 5 days a week, it's now three, or maybe it's 4 or 5 hours a day instead of 8 or 9.
So yeah, that's what I would hope 5 years from now looks like. I certainly think, you know, their governments and tech companies need to continue doing the work to make sure that AI is used responsibly. And I know that that's happening and that's trending good. But at the same time, we can't drop the ball there, especially as things continue to develop and be more and more complicated. So I'm trusting that humanity knows how to look out for humanity, I guess.
That's wonderful. I am an optimist too. So I really like hearing that. I feel like, you know, with technology, all of the changes, if we were to go back in time and look at the timeline and even look at social media, there's always been concern that one new invention or innovation will replace or, you know, kind of destroy the quality of the foundation. But so far, I feel like all of these new advances are helping people. And I like that idea of being able to do the work that we need to do in a shorter amount of time so that we can enjoy life.
Yeah. And I would be, you know, I certainly want to mention some of the other use cases that are not just for professionals too. I think, you know, it's easy to look at this technology and immediately think, oh my gosh, how is this going to impact me today, tomorrow, the next day? But there's a lot of really incredible things that AI can do for humanity. Early cancer detection, disease prevention, pandemic prevention, earthquake prediction, wildfire prediction, I guess like more accurate weather prediction, extreme weather prediction. And that's just like an incredibly small subset of, you know, AI for good use cases. But a few minutes to look into a handful of those, you'll see that companies see the opportunity to basically help the world by using AI for those use cases. And I think that there's so much more that's unlocked by it. So again, I certainly think, you know, professionals have to be proactive now and have to consider what they need to do to remain competitive and also, you know, leverage this for the future, but also try to be optimistic about what it can do for us long term.
I didn't get a chance to ask you this earlier, but how did you get involved in this space? What motivated you to focus on upskilling professionals for the AI age?
I've always been a proactive professional, I guess. I studied finance in school, and then I pivoted my career into web analytics when that was kind of all the buzz about 11 years ago. And then maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I pivoted from web analytics to product management. So I've always been one to invest in my career and figure out how to be more dynamic and skilled. And the second that I opened up ChatGPT-3, I think it was, you know, a year and a half ago at this point, I connected the dots. I immediately knew this was going to be a thing and kind of started prepping myself for what was needed. And then, you know, Futurepedia building that. And I guess just like seeing the opportunity to be a helpful resource and repository for professionals. Everyone's going to jump on this train at some point. I think we're still kind of in the early adopter phase. And so I just kind of thought it was a great synergy between like who I am as a person, trying to be proactive and dynamic and competitive and work hard. But at the same time, now AI enables you to do all that plus work smarter. And I thought that I'd have an opportunity to kind of share that with professionals everywhere. So yeah, I guess it was just the perfect match between who I am and the emerging tech that kind of drew me to invest in creating this.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you, Dan, for joining me here on AI and Journalism. I definitely will hopefully check in with you and see how things are going and perhaps have you, you know, maybe come back and tell us the latest tools. Maybe we could do an annual or a quarterly thing where you give us the tools that we must go to as journalists really and communicators, stay on top or try to stay on top of what's happening with the AI space. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. And I'm totally open to that. It sounds great. I mean, things are evolving so fast that I'm sure I'd have, you know, a whole other hour's worth of stuff to talk about by then. So yeah, that sounds great. And hope this was helpful for you and all the listeners out there.
Definitely. Thanks so much. Thanks, Dan Greco of Futurepedia, for joining me, Yumi Wilson, here on AI and Journalism.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to AI and Journalism. If you liked what you heard, please hit that subscribe button. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to share your thoughts and suggest future topics or even guests. And remember to always keep questioning and keep growing.